Evolution and Christianity by Charles Fleurer. He begins. The most significant word in the vocabulary of the present generation, the word of farthest reaching and most varied import, is undoubtedly evolution. It is not a new term freshly coined to name a recent discovery, since it has been familiar to the English-speaking race for at least a century. Nor, as understood by us, does it convey an entirely new meaning. Commonly employed as a synonym of development, it expresses a thought which is at least as old as the ancient Greeks, who were accustomed to speak of all forms in the realm of nature as the result of an unfolding process. Fleurer goes on to name several examples from ancient Greece and Rome, and then lists more modern, that is, 19th century, philosophers. He continues, "We yet trace the general idea of development, or that existing organic substances were evolved from pre-existing forms of matter. Indeed, in all the ages there were glimpses of the thought, as men carefully noted the growth of the plant from the seed and of the animal from the egg. But although the two terms, development and evolution, have important features in common, each being the name which we give to an unfolding process, yet the latter word, as employed by modern scientists, has as much more definite meaning than the former. In short, evolution is a name given to a method of development. As a theory, it does not explain the origin of life, which, when reduced to its simplest terms, still remains as profound a mystery as ever. But without accounting for life, it describes the modified forms under which life appears. In other words, evolution undertakes to answer the question, how does development take place?" Fleurer then describes how evolution is about the natural variations which occur in nature because a parent never makes an exact copy of itself. Its progeny are always slightly different. He's actually describing the process of natural selection, wherein the being with the best characteristics for the moment survives to procreate. And then he says, "Now evolution is the name for that method of development apparent in the seizure of these variations under favorable conditions, and in making them permanent features, so that at length distinctively new types appear in place of the old ones. Such being the law of evolution as accepted by all modern thinkers of respectable scientific and philosophical attainments, it has been traced as operating in almost as many different directions as there are branches of human research. All modern astronomers employ it to account for the formation of worlds. Geologists regard it as the process by which slow and continuous changes were effected in the formation of the Earth's wondrously engraved crust. Darwin, Huxley, and others show how it works in the realm of biology. Tyler, Lubbock, and Herbert Spencer have employed it to explain the social development of the race. And thinkers have shown how it accounts for the growth of nations. Whatever his special field of study, the true evolutionist maintains that the phenomena which he records are produced by development from a preceding type through a variation so slight in successive stages of the change as to be noticeable only in accumulated results. This is the modern doctrine of evolution." Now, Fleurer takes a page to talk about Darwinism, which, in his view, is only about evolution as it relates to biology. Then he starts to get down to the crux of his thinking. Now, if evolution is the name for a universal process by which everything around us came into its present shape, then it becomes important for us to determine whether systems or opinions to which we have given adherence are warranted by it. Among these systems, we must reckon religion. Is it adequately accounted for by this law? are the various types in which it appears among men, the result of this evolutionary process? Or did they come into existence in some other way? And then, to answer, Fleur lays out a brief history of religion. It requires but little acquaintance with the more important religious systems of the world to learn that each lays claim to a supernatural origin, that in some remote period, the religion was revealed to men in an extraordinary and exceptional way, that instead of growing out of man's moral nature, it was given to him by a special intervention from on high. It is readily conceded that all the arts, sciences, civil and social institutions known to man were developed from his original endowment. But religion has been regarded as a thing so sacred and apart from the common order as to require a direct action of deity in its behalf. So it has been treated as if it were a code framed in heaven and then conveyed to men on earth, very much as an ambassador receives the instructions of a potentate, which he transmits to his charge. Such is the claim which every religion makes in its own behalf. This is still the attitude of a large majority of those who accept our Bible as their religious charter. Most of them are quite willing to admit that the religions known as pagan may have been developed out of a man's moral nature, but while deeming this method pursued with the larger portion of humanity, they contend that an extraordinary sanction was given to the Hebrew Scriptures in a direct revelation from God. But there would seem to be no valid reason for making this exception. The unprejudiced mind fails to discern what there was in the Hebrew race or situation that God should deviate from the uniform method and grant a special revelation. While other nations, just as near to him and just as deserving, were left to form a religion as best they could. No doubt the supposition is flattering to the vanity of those who entertain it, but it seems entirely unreasonable when the character of other religions is carefully examined. If, as conceded by Christians, all other known religions may have been evolved through human experience, they containing doctrines and precepts identical with our own, then why may not the same process have been followed by the Christian system? Indeed, why may not that be the most complete evolution of religion? Every rational consideration points in this direction, and a comparison of the Christian with other systems confirms the hypothesis. It is found that all religions have the same general structural features, their speculative doctrines, their traditions, their code of morals. There is every reason to think that they came into existence in the same way, their differences being accounted for by local conditions. In other words, they are the result of an evolution, and the time will come when the doctrine of special revelation will be consigned to the same limbo whither has already gone that of special creation. The simple truth is that in the different religions of the world we have a transcript of the development of the moral and religious portion of man's being, just as in his political and social institutions we witness a development of the secular side of his nature. So Fleur denies revelation from on high, or that any one religion is more special, more truthful or accurate, than another, stating they have all evolved according to the local culture of the people. To support his point, he next proceeds to dissect the Old and New Testaments to show how they evolved from earlier stories and pagan cults. We'll skip over the Old Testament stuff to focus on what he says about Jesus. Coming to a more direct consideration of Christianity, we find it universally recognized as a plant growing out of the older Hebrew stock. We must look upon the Christianity of Jesus as a further and fuller development of the Hebrew system. But for that system, probably no such teacher as Jesus of Nazareth would ever have been. Born and reared a Jew and inheriting Hebrew traditions, yet he was a cosmopolite in thought. Endowed with remarkable spiritual powers and with sympathies that swept beyond all national prejudices and boundaries, we have in him the conditions for formulating a broader and a loftier type of religion than ever his countrymen believed. In fact, it may well be doubted whether he intended to inaugurate any new religion. Rather, he appears as one who, finding the narrowness and hollowness of decaying Judaism repulsive to his earnest nature, sought to reform and enlarge the system of his fathers. He brought a new spirit to the interpretation of Judaism. Under his touch, it became something inestimably larger and nobler than the faith of the fathers. Jesus, by breathing a new life into the cold and shrunken body of the Hebrew system, developed an essentially new religion. The Hebrew system embodied great essential truths, but it had made them partial through a failure to extend them beyond national lines. Jesus' clearer and more commanding vision gave them a worldwide horizon. The fatherhood of God was a familiar thought to the Hebrew, but he had hitherto been accustomed to interpret it in a partial sense, as signifying a divine paternity for his countrymen only. Jesus taught an unlimited father with an equal love for all men as his children, a love like the sun and the rain, embracing every son of God in a beneficent ministry. The Hebrew brotherhood of man, like the conception of all contemporary countries, was restricted to national boundaries, and the Jew was regarded as the exclusively favored child of God. Jesus broke down the walls of partition and threw all the nations into one common family as large as the human race. The power of love had been felt and exercised by men from time immemorial, and the greater religions had even something like the golden rule. But whereas in each case the love of neighbor was a maxim, subject to such limited interpretations as men were inclined to put upon it, Jesus made it the vital and essential motive in his religion, the law of action of which all others were modifications. Jesus dealt with universals in religion, and the three mighty truths already described are the distinguishing features of his religion, differentiating it from all ethnic types that had preceded it. In all this is seen the working of the principle of evolution. We have in Christianity the most fully developed religion the world has ever known, complete in its conception of God, of man, and of vital spiritual forces. Still, it bears traces of ancient thought and custom rudimentary to the more advanced and comprehensive features that distinguish it as a universal religion. Making allowance for the mythical and miraculous accretions which have been added to the Nazarene simple teaching, Christianity is seen as the creation of a mastermind peculiarly gifted with spiritual insight and sympathy, and touching in its majestic sweep the whole gamut of human experience. After describing more of the special nature of Jesus, Fleurer continues, "The result was the religion of Jesus with its universal fatherhood, universal brotherhood, and the law of love as the central and supreme rule for human conduct. It was evolved just as all other religions were evolved, through combined influences drawing out the divine elements existing in the soul of its author, and, in a degree, in every soul as well. It is superior to other religions in that it is more highly developed form of the moral sense implanted by the Creator in man." The remainder of Fleurer's article is about how God figures into the evolution of religion. And then he concludes, "Finally, since evolution and Christianity may be considered different names for one great process, we read in both the prophecy of the grandest possible future for man. If, through ages of struggling, he has developed to what he is, in this fact we have the assurance of an immeasurable growth. Grand as are his powers and achievements today as compared with those of the past, who dare say that the limit has been faintly approximated by any human soul? Who shall circumscribe its possibilities for good? Who shall undertake to say that all of man's faculties have yet been born? A part of that orderly movement which sweeps onward to increasingly better and wider results, man, as the highest creature in space or time, must accomplish his destiny and in moral perfection complete the unity of the universe.